Seth Rollins literally burns it down, Lana and Lashley continue to be uncomfortable, and the WWE draft continues. Your full Raw review starts right after this. So you want a really fun YouTube channel to check out? Go to Trio of Lunatics. They're all gamers who love to talk trash to one another or anyone else involved and love to have fun. They're also wrestling fans. So pretty soon they're going to have a WWE podcast just like this. And I really recommend you guys check this out. They've got a ton of videos uploaded already, including games like WWE 2K18, GTA 5, and much more. It's honestly really funny to listen to. So check out the Trio of Lunatics on YouTube right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
This is the WWE Podcast for October 15th. This Tuesday, October 15th, 2019. Thank you so much for joining me, and this is a Raw review show that is very draft-heavy, a draft that made little sense from so many perspectives and was cheesy and a bit over the top. Again, I would like to reiterate that while this was cheesy and it was terrible in terms of execution and believability, I do appreciate, and I said this on a show with my co-host Ashley last week, I appreciate WWE trying to make things feel more sports-like. I get it. I understand it. I appreciate that from the perspective of being a fan that enjoys and relishes and looks forward to a simulated sport that I can get emotionally invested in. And oftentimes you get disconnected from a product that gets lost in the sauce and you forget that you don't forget, and that's the problem. You are reminded on a regular basis on every show that what you're watching isn't real and it's scripted. And so I appreciate their sports-like feel and trying to emulate the way that Fox presents their sports. So we're going to get into, in detail, the draft and what I thought about it and some of the picks. I'm not going to go through everything. It's just impossible, right? I can't go through every pick and who I would have placed where. But I can give you my reactions to some items and some things that are just so head scratching that I have a bald spot on my head. So we're gonna get into all of the draft components that I really want to comment on, and of course I have a lot of really just question marks regarding Cain Velasquez and Brock Lesnar that I'm gonna get to at some point in the show too. And why in the actual hell is Cain Velasquez getting a WWE championship opportunity? I just do not understand it. Nobody can convince me on this earth why he deserves a championship match. So we're going to, of course, get to that. And I started a little bit of that with Ashley last week and reacted in the moment. And I may have said a cuss word or two. So if you guys are just chomping at the bit and salivating to hear me cuss and go off, well, you get a very small sample of that last week, and particularly last Sunday, this past Sunday. So really only 2 days ago. Boy, I feel like I'm losing my mind. As you guys know, I'm moving, right? Or I did move, so my head is spinning. I don't know which way is up or down. I'm just in a daze of moving, and anybody that's moved, you feel the pain. You know what it's like. It's just a mental drain in every sense of the word. So, all right. Well, guys, thank you for listening to the WWE Podcast. And I want to thank you for those of you who are new listeners and those of you who are existing and been long time listeners. It's much appreciated. I know that some of you have also joined on Patreon, and you guys know that if you join there, it's completely ad-free. I know I plug this every time, but I get so many people who write me and say, oh, I love your show, but there's too many ads or whatever. Hey, Listen, first of all, you got to monetize your show. Second of all, there's a really easy way to get an ad-free experience for just a 100 pennies a month. 100 pennies a month. Head on over to patreon.com/WWE podcast and you can get all of the WWE podcast episodes ad-free, plus some video content, and I'm working on putting up more of that in the near future. So head on over there. You can also head to the website. Y'all know what that web address is. I'm not even going to tell you. If you don't, well, take a guess and you'll probably get it right. So lots of places to find this show. And if you're a new listener, thank you. And if you'd like to spread the word, tell a friend. Hey, say, hey, I think you'd enjoy this show. Or maybe you want to tell a friend, I think this show will really, really piss you off. In which case, in both cases, I get a new listener, right? So thank you guys so much for spreading the word. This is how a lot of the show's success happens, is because of you spreading the word and sharing this on social media or whatever. So, all right, well, let's get into it here. And the first thing that jumps to my mind, because it's the last thing we saw before the draft, is Seth Rollins literally, or those of you who are Parks and Rec fans, literally burned it down and burned down the Firefly Funhouse. Seth Rollins set it ablaze in a blaze of glory. Seth Rollins finds Bray Wyatt in his hidden location, apparently backstage, sets his entire set on fire. The pictures melt off the wall. He actually attacked Bray, and Bray, in his sweater vest character, was basically crying, "Why are you doing this, Seth?" And didn't get any offense in against Seth. He was very reserved and just took the beating from Seth. And so a couple things here. Interesting way to end Raw, number one. I felt a little bit like this was Randy Orton burning down that abandoned cabin that apparently held Sister Abigail. Was it back in 2017 or so? Randy Orton burned it down, and apparently Bray Wyatt lost his powers, but then he didn't. It just magnified his powers somehow, and it was just a ridiculous storyline. And one of the most recognizable visuals is Randy Orton doing his signature pose as a trail of fire leads to that cabin where Sister Abigail's ashes were, right? So it felt a little bit like that. Apparently that's just how you destroy Bray Wyatt. Or if Seth Rollins paid attention, that's actually not how you destroy Bray Wyatt. And you actually are going to be magnifying his magical powers. So I don't know what to make of it. I don't hate it. I guess I'm intrigued. But at the same time, I didn't like it from the perspective of, if you're trying to get Seth Rollins over as a babyface, can you be any more tone deaf to what the fans are saying when it comes to Bray Wyatt? I mean, Seth was off Monday night last week, completely off the show other than a quick video recap of Hell in a Cell, and smartly so. I've said this many times over the last week or so, keeping Bray Wyatt and Seth Rollins off of that Monday Night Raw show, best move WWE ever did. They bring Seth back on SmackDown, Friday Night SmackDown. He gets attacked by The Fiend, and you go, oh my God, here we go. And so you know this feud is continuing. Now, even though they got drafted on separate brands, well, apparently that doesn't matter. WWE, before the brand split even begins, are already breaking the mold and not adhering to what a draft is. And I'm going to talk about that too, as to, can WWE actually have some self-control here? And what will make this a successful brand or draft? As there have been many iterations in the past. So I'm going to get to that too. But back to Bray Wyatt. I mean, I honestly don't want to see Bray Wyatt and the Fiend, rather, and Seth Rollins anymore. I'm done with it already. I didn't want to see it from the get-go. It's just not the right time. I felt like it was way too soon. So Seth Rollins lights the fire of the Firefly Funhouse. You immediately have the fans boo. I would say it was 75-25, maybe that's being generous, of Seth Rollins getting booed by the fans. Because, again, maybe this is WWE's effort to turn Seth heel. Maybe that's what it is. And if that's the case, great move. Great move if that's the case. If that's the key. If that's not the objective and the goal. This was a ill-fated, terrible idea to not see the fans booing this coming. The fans already have a bad taste in their mouth from what happened at Hell in a Cell. They remember that, and unfortunately, the Sasha Banks, Becky Lynch, Hell in a Cell is overshadowed and undone by how badly booked the Bray Wyatt, Seth Rollins, Hell in a Cell match was. All of the good that had been done in that pay-per-view was undone. And what do you think of when you think of Hell in a Cell now? Unfortunately, you think of the negative. And I know that we live in a society that gravitates towards negativity, and we all love to criticize, critique, be critical. But when facts are facts, and you have the overwhelming majority of fans in unison, in agreement, saying, this sucks. This is terrible. You can't ignore that reaction. Do you have to dwell on it? No, you can move forward. And WWE did a smart move, as I said, by just distancing themselves from that and giving the fans time to cool off and not just do an immediate reaction. Well, that was a smart move because when Seth Rollins was first introduced on Monday Night Raw this week in an interview with Charlie, he got a positive reaction. Seth got a mainly positive reaction and cut a good promo and said that by the end of the night, he's going to burn it down. Little did we know that that was going to be not just a figure of speech, but literally burning it down. But again, I question this if the goal is to get Seth over as a babyface. I applaud this if this is a way to get Seth to turn heel. I personally enjoy Seth more as a heel anyway. I think Seth Rollins has always just been a heel playing a babyface. I feel that same way with Charlotte. Both of these individuals are just true heels playing the good guy. That's how I feel that they are. They just don't feel cast correctly, even after all of this time, after Seth Rollins left the Authority. And don't forget, Seth was kicked out of the Authority. They basically said they didn't want him. How is that supposed to be any kind of... How am I supposed to feel any kind of sympathy for that? When the group that you hate kicks out a member, how am I supposed to feel sympathy for that member? You were a part of it. You didn't decide to leave. So ever since then, and when Seth Rollins returned at Extreme Rules after he missed WrestleMania with the knee injury that happened in Ireland, I believe, against Sheamus, and the fans were going ape you know what for him, and they decided to turn him heel that night, I still think back to that night. Terrible move at that time. If you wanted to get him over as a babyface, that would have been the time. They continued to press him as a heel. He finally turns face, and it just still doesn't feel right. I always have felt and still continue to feel Seth Rollins is a natural-born heel. Yes, he's great in the ring, and the fans appreciate that. But Seth Rollins is born a heel. He doesn't have a great voice. His voice is still extremely annoying. I mean, he's a face. He's a good babyface, okay? I think he's good. But I think he's great as a heel. He's got a natural, annoying voice that I just... It's nails on a chalkboard to me. He's got the look, the face of a heel. And I don't mean that as a bad-looking guy. He just looks like he could be a total douchebag. I mean, like, literally, that's what he looks like he could be. A total D-bag. And he plays a good guy... And I feel like he's playing a good guy. So anyway, I'm getting back on track here. I know many of you have said, well, you don't really review Monday Night Raw. You know what? Sometimes I really don't. Sometimes I take a topic and just go off the rails with it. Unfortunately, you know what? No apologies. That's just how my brain works. But I am going to consciously make an effort to actually stick to the details of the show we just watched. So back to Monday Night Raw. I don't know what to make of heads or tails of it. I'm sure that we will see The Fiend again. This in no way means that Seth Rollins is gone or Bray Wyatt is gone by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, I expect a Firefly Funhouse in ruins next week where Bray Wyatt is still performing the show where, you know, there's charred pictures and maybe his, Ramblin' Rabbit is half burned or something. Like, they will have a show where Bray Wyatt continues his Firefly Funhouse in ruin. And I think that's how it's going to happen. One more thing I will say. Apparently, this just leads automatically to another WWE Universal Championship match for Bray Wyatt. Here's to the logic that just continues to continue and exist in the WWE environment of the golden rule. You don't have to earn an opportunity at a championship. All you have to do is attack the champion backstage, in their home, after a match, during a match, when they're on commentary, doesn't matter, in the locker room, wherever. The golden rule is attack the champion and you get an automatic championship opportunity. It's beyond faulty. It's asinine. It is something that is, again, this is nothing new. I'm not critiquing and being critical of this because it's something that all of a sudden popped up. It has been in the fabric of WWE booking logic forever. Forever. And it makes no sense. Zero. I could see a non-title match because I'll fight you, but I'm going to beat you. I'm not going to put my championship on the line for something you haven't earned. But WWE has to always make it the biggest they can when it doesn't make sense. And furthermore, they have a no falls, falls count anywhere match. Shouldn't that have been before Hell in a Cell? Further devaluing the cell by not just saying this is the blow off of our program, which again, this it shouldn't have been, but the cell is where matches or where programs and rivalries go to die. They end in the cell. Instead, it appears that Hell in a Cell is just a launching point for their continued program, which they should stay the hell away from each other. They don't need to be near each other. It brings bad memories. They're on parallel paths. Neither can afford to lose clean. You are just booking yourself into a corner. So now they go into Falls Count Anywhere. I mean, what's next? What's Survivor Series? Just a singles match? And then an arm wrestling match? And then just a verbal exchange? I mean, are we just going to continue to descend into basically a backwards storyline? I don't know. I'm getting frustrated and I'm trying not to yell in your ear. So I apologize. I'm going to try to keep my voice down. But it just makes little to no sense. I'm just doesn't. It just doesn't. So, alrighty. Well, some other things about Monday Night Raw is Lana and Lashley. The only thing I got to say about that, because I talked about it in the open, is what, like three words. What the hell? Really? What the hell? What's happening? What is this? Is the point to just make us uncomfortable for the sake of just making people uncomfortable? I don't even care about the payoff at this point. The payoff is, and the only payoff could be, okay, well, it's Rusev versus Lashley. Great. Great. I'm not, honestly, like, I don't care about that match. I don't. And, I mean, I don't know. I'm starting to lose interest even as to why Lana and Lashley got together and how they did. And it's uncomfortable to watch. It's borderline PG, not PG. It's just weird. It's just weird. And I don't think they know where they're going with it. They just want some sexuality in there. And that's what they do. They are making Lana a 1999 diva. That you look at her as a sex object. That's what they're doing. What have they done with Lana the last time? Since she re-debuted. Since she came back. Made out with Lashley. For an uncomfortable amount of time. Went to a hotel room as the WWE cameras decided to just be there and watch them, you know, under the covers. And then she gets a massage. I mean, they are sexualizing Lana. It's, again, I'm a guy. I'm a straight male, which means I like looking at pretty women. But not in wrestling, okay? And that's not what I watch wrestling for. They could completely remove this from wrestling forever and ever, and I would never say that wrestling needs this again, ever. But, all right, some other things going on, and one thing I did like is I'm going to balance this out a bit. The Viking Raiders, surprisingly, originally when I saw this, I said, what in the hell are they doing as champions? They have been on Raw for basically a cup of coffee. They have been on Monday Night Raw, you know, about as long as I've been recording this podcast. And yes, they were in NXT. Yes, they have won. They were a team in Ring of Honor and many other promotions. I think that's great. I think that's great to bring that up because it adds credibility instantly to the team to say they weren't just ragtag put together, that they have a long history of teaming together, which makes sense as to why they would be able to beat the tag team champions that were literally just thrown together a month ago. So that is believable. I guess the only critique I don't like is that, hey, they've only been here for how long? And I actually thought that Dolph and Robert Roode could have a long-standing championship run in them. And I don't like this hot potato. They did it with the Raw tag team belts. They did it with the SmackDown belt, although for good reasons. I just, as a general rule of thumb, I don't like short reigns. It's because the titles become a prop. They don't become a goal. They become a prop. So, but again, I really enjoyed the match with the Viking Raiders and Dolph and Robert Roode way more than I thought I would. Way more than I thought I would. The crowd was into it, which made me get into it. Very well done on all fronts. Really enjoyed it. Athletic, big men. The crowd is into it. I would like a little bit more promo from them. They seem to be on the uptick. I was concerned, and you've heard me say it, and I'll stand by it, that they could be, you know, the Ascension Part 2. And I don't think they're at that level. I think that they are above that, and good for them. I'm excited for this. I expect a rematch with Dolph and Robert Roode because they put on a great, great match on Raw. And I expect it to continue, and this program should. I know that the automatic rematch clause is antiquated, and it's, you know, that doesn't, it doesn't always happen. Well, one way or another, Dolph and Robert Roode will find themselves right back in the title picture. So I'm willing to give this a chance. Again, my initial reaction as I was watching it on my way home from work today. Yeah, that's how little time I have, and I probably shouldn't admit that on the air, but I was actually trying to catch up on Raw as I was driving home. I was being as safe as I possibly could. I wasn't looking down, looking up, looking down. I tried to put it at a level in which I could see the road the best I could with the iPhone, right? So, but that's how little time I have. I have to, it's so bad. But anyway, you guys don't care about that. I just immediately, when I saw that, I said, what? Why? But the crowd brought me into it. Their promo after the match solidified it for me that I'm okay and going to give this a chance. I am just totally removed from thinking WWE is ever going to truly push Dolph and or Robert Roode. I think that their places are solidified in forever land in WWE of just being kind of the mid-card guys that touch, sniff the main event, and then get pushed right back down to where they WWE feels they should be, and that's the mid-card or as a tag team or just kind of going away for a while, coming back. They're like utility men. They're journeymen. They're there. They're great in terms of fundamentally strong. They are good gatekeepers for new talent coming up. They're solid on the mic. They're very parallel in their career in terms of longevity and in terms of just, again, fundamentals, basics inside the ring. So I just have no faith in either man for WWE to push. So I'm not surprised, and I'm okay with them doing this. I just hope it's not a shock factor to be a shock factor, and that there's some actual plan here for the Viking Raiders. But I say that about all things. Every time WWE does this, I always say there, you know, I would love a long-term run for so-and-so, but I digress. Other news, Eric Bischoff fired from WWE. Fired. I tweeted out earlier today that I hope he's with WWE in some capacity because I believe that he's too big of a business mind and too good of a business mind to be let go. And he could add to the WWE product in some other capacity if it's not the executive director of SmackDown. But in the fates that be, we have Bruce Pritchard taking over for Eric Bischoff. And I don't even know what to make of this. Clearly, there were some backstage issues with Eric Bischoff. There were some rumors that, again, rumors that Eric Bischoff made guys and gals feel like they wanted to quit. People who were underneath him wanted to quit. It just was not a good relationship with the people that were existing in the WWE culture. So, am I surprised? Not really. Eric Bischoff has been so far removed from the product, admittedly so, says that he has been so far removed from the product that he had time to needed time to catch up. And that's not a good sign if you bring somebody in really based on name value and not recent credentials or true passion in the current product. That's this is the downside of that. We're seeing that of, yes, he has a good resume. Yes, he was the face of the WCW Nitro run for 86 weeks or 83 weeks. But he has been removed from the product. That was 20 years ago. It's been a long time since we have had the Monday Night Wars. Long time. And now you put a guy in here that has not been keeping up with the product, doesn't truly understand what's going on, needs time to catch up in an environment that there is no time to catch up. It's go, 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 perform for me now, perform at a high level. It just was not a good environment. Again, I don't know the details other than to say, apparently the people working below him wanted to quit. So I don't know who those people were. I don't know the sources in which those come from in terms of internally in WWE, but those are the rumblings. So Bruce Pritchard takes over, and now we will have something to wrestle with. How about that for a transition from his podcast to his new role? So we'll see. We'll see. SmackDown has been a bit of a mess lately. I will say that. So, all right. One other thing. As I move towards the draft, just getting into the draft, Samoa Joe is drafted in the fifth round. The fifth round. A guy that went toe-to-toe with Brock Lesnar. A guy that is and was at the top of the SmackDown Live, when it was SmackDown Live, roster. So here are some of the names that were drafted ahead of Samoa Joe. Just a few. Ready? 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 Here we go. Jinder Mahal. Buddy Murphy. Humberto Carrillo. Yep. You're probably saying, now who the F is that? The Kabuki Warriors. Andrade. R-Truth, Akira Tozawa, Shelton Benjamin, although Shelton and Akira were both drafted in the same round as Samoa Joe. Are you kidding me? A guy that hasn't been on TV in months, had a terrible WWE championship reign, one that people would like to forget, in Jinder Mahal, gets drafted ahead of Samoa Joe? A guy that the WWE main audience has no idea who they are, Humberto Carrillo, gets drafted two rounds ahead of Samoa Joe? What? Rusev, a guy that was off WWE TV for months and is now involved in an awful storyline with Lana and Lashley, gets drafted in the second round? How is this possible? You may say, well, Samoa Joe's injured. What? No. No, regardless if he's injured, you still have that guy locked up. Why? What? This made no sense. And so, I mean, in the first round, again, we had Seth Rollins, Charlotte Flair, and Andrade. I mean, fine. This was the WWE Raw first pick. And I just... I have trouble with my brain when I hear that. I mean, here are some undrafted guys. Guys that didn't even get picked. Cesaro. Luke Harper. Luke Harper. Undrafted women, some of the big names. The Iconics. Fire and Desire. Are you kidding me? undrafted tag teams, AOP, Curt Hawkins, and Zack Ryder. I could do without Hawkins and Ryder, but AOP is surprising as they've really started to add depth to their characters the last couple of weeks with their promos backstage that are awesome. So again, the part-time and likely ineligible superstars, Kane Velasquez, John Cena, Ronda Rousey, and The Undertaker. Not surprising there. You can't really allow, you know, you can't really draft these people because they just show up wherever WWE finds it convenient for them to show up in storyline. So fine, they're exempt. I would have liked them to explain to me if a champion is drafted, how does that work? Well, you may ask, but what does that matter? Well, you have the Raw Women's Championship. You have the SmackDown Women's Championship. You have the Raw Tag Team Champions, the SmackDown Tag Team Champions, and the Universal and WWE Championship are interchangeable. I know we all assimilate the Universal Championship with the Raw because it's where it's been. It's lived there. That's been its home. And WWE Championship has just been there on SmackDown, but it's not exclusive to the brand. It doesn't tie itself to the brand like the tag team belts do, like the women's tag team or like the women's singles championship does. So what would have happened there? They never explained that. What do you do? You would say, well, if the Raw Tag Team Champions got drafted to SmackDown, they would just become the SmackDown Tag Team Champions. Well, it doesn't work like that unless you also have the Raw brand or USA draft the SmackDown Tag Team Champions and just transition them into the Raw Tag Team Champions. Otherwise, you have the SmackDown Tag Team Champions on Raw and you have the Raw Tag Team Champions on SmackDown. Makes no sense. But they never even bothered to address that. Never even thought about that as a possibility. I mean, you guys are poking holes. Well, wait a minute. If this is supposed to be a legitimate sports simulated draft, and they tried to make it such with all of the silly Fox, sportscasters' opinions and their scripted sayings and cute quips and all this weird stuff, and you had the war room, oh, we'll get there. You overlook that, and they had the rules put out on the screen. I appreciate that, but you couldn't have just said what happens when a champion gets drafted? It's something I was thinking about. I go, well, what are they going to do? Well, clearly they're not drafting champions. That's what that did for me. So the war room, I just want to touch on this. And I touched on this a little bit on Sunday with Ashley. Why? Why are we doing the war room? There's a couple things here. I appreciate, again, I'm trying to be as positive as I can because I truly do appreciate WWE's effort here to try to make this a sports simulation on a massive sports network. I get it. They do have true war rooms. But to believe that each network has the intelligence to correctly pick their draft pick, it's just not correct. It's just not right. It's not right. You can't tell me that they have the intelligence to do that. And then when you have them, when the cameras pan to them and cut to them with their reaction to whoever they just drafted, it's like they all just simultaneously won the lottery as a group. It's way overboard. I mean, you look at the reaction that they gave to, I'm not kidding you, Rey Mysterio. And Rey Mysterio is a legend, but he's on the backside of his career. Really? They acted like their firstborn son was, their firstborn child was just born. I don't know. I have a better analogy, but I'm tired. But you know what I'm talking about. Like, take a look at the reactions. It's embarrassing. And beyond that, again, this will never, ever change. It will never change. And I understand the reasons why it won't change. Anytime that there's a draft, a trade, I'm sure we'll have a massive trade. There's been rumors of a blockbuster trade. Fine, whatever. But I've come to grips that this will never change, but it irks me to no end. Every single pick, and I put pick in quotations, every single choice, every single draft, every single selection that each side made was the best thing that ever happened. Everything had great potential. Everything was a great pick. What a star-studded lineup. What an amazing choice. Oh, you can't go wrong with that person. Every single pick. So there is no such thing, and was no such thing, as a bad pick. As, I don't know, they should have probably gone here. Now, if you're doing a sports simulation, there are critics on the network who will critique the picks of the team. In like the NFL. The NFL gets, like, the teams that make their selections get destroyed. Destroyed. Look at the Giants, for example. Again, the New York Giants. I'm a Giants fan, so this is how I know this. Most of you are like, I don't care about the Giants. Well, here's an example. The Giants chose Daniel Jones, a quarterback from Duke, to replace Eli Manning in their fifth round pick. People were going nuts, losing their minds. Everything, oh my God. You know, he had some people who loved it, but boy, did you have people who hated it. And a lot of the executives, a lot of the top sports personalities and radio personalities were killing it. Now, do you think you'll ever see that in WWE? Never. Never. Everything's an amazing pick. Everything's got great potential. Everything is just a great. Everything's perfect. You could basically close your eyes, throw a bunch of names in a hat, swish it around and just pick one, and it would be the best thing that ever happened. And, you know, if I had Corey Graves, or if I had Michael Cole, or if I had any of the announcers sitting here, they would tell you, well, what are we supposed to say? It's about the talent. You have to put them over. And I get it. So again, I understand the logic for it, that you can't bury the talent, but everything has to be so exciting and great. But what about maybe questioning one? Maybe saying, I don't know if there'll be a good fit here. And then building that narrative that, well, they may not have thought to be a good pick, which then becomes more exciting when they start to rise and the audience starts to get behind them, or they start to ascend and put on great matches or cut a good, great promo. And it organically becomes something that the fans get behind, rather than just apparently the only way they're going to succeed is if the announcers lose their minds over every pick. And the pre-show team of Renee and Booker T and Samoa Joe, everybody has to put everyone over all the time, and it's garbage. It's BS. It's terrible. It's you know what? I want to swear, but I'm not gonna. It just makes no sense. It just makes no sense to do that. It becomes mind-numbing. It becomes eye-rolling. How is every pick possibly that good? It's about putting over talent. Well, it's not going to kill them. You know, their careers are not going to be defined and directed by your one comment or suggestion or critique. It's not. So, I don't know. But anyway, so that whole thing, the war room, I thought was silly because it was overdone. And to think that the executives are apparently, facing off against each other. Like, apparently USA and Fox, we're supposed to believe, are at odds. Why? They're on separate networks. What are they fighting for? I know they're trying to get the best stars, but it's not like they're going head to head. They're not. They're on separate days, separate networks. I don't know. But again, I would, give the format of the draft, the execution of a draft, a C-. I would give the effort, and at least I would give the intent to improve a B or a B+, because I know what they were going for, and I appreciate that, and I understand that, and I like it. But the execution, oof, that's something else. The execution is always key, and I'm moving on. I want to keep Raw moving here. The Tyson Fury and Braun Strowman contract signing. Okay, first of all, this match, am I interested in it? I guess kind of. I mean, this is, to me, and from everything I've seen her, this is just a one-off. And again, you guys know my golden rule: bring in a celebrity, 9 times out of 10, WWE is going to make them shine and make the existing stars look like fools. 9 times out of 10. outside of K-Fed, outside of Mark Cuban, name another. Name another. I mean, it's almost as if Braun Strowman has assumed the Big Show role. Remember Big Show facing off against Floyd Mayweather? I did a whole show on that. And I actually had a lot of praise to say about that match in terms of its quality and storyline build. Great storytelling. Great overachieving match at WrestleMania 23 in Orlando. I remember, again, a quick side note, I was drunk on spring break with my laptop in my hotel room. We actually had our flight delayed. And no one believed this. We actually had to go to work the next day. But our flight got canceled due to bad weather in Atlanta. So we had to go back from the airport back to a hotel room and stay an extra night in Panama City, Florida. In 2009 or 8, I can't remember. Whenever WrestleMania 23 was. In Orlando. I remember that pay-per-view because my buddies went out. I stayed in the room on my laptop and watched WrestleMania. And I remember sitting there crushing beer after beer after beer. And boy, I mean, I remember the pay-per-view very well. And that was the night that Ric Flair lost to Shawn Michaels and retired. And Shawn said, "I'm sorry, I love you." I remember Edge and Undertaker. Undertaker defeating Edge for the World Heavyweight Championship. And that match with Big Show and Floyd Money Mayweather. And I loved it when Big Show chokeslam one of Mayweather's henchmen, for lack of a better term. And I remember my buddy coming in at that moment, saw that. He was drunk too, along with a couple of other friends and my brother. Chokeslammed me on the bed. And all of those beers immediately hit me because I had been sitting the whole time. And when those beers hit me, whew, my head started spinning. I go, "Oh, crap." And this thing started to get like a little nauseous and my night was just toast. I was so mad. Because I was feeling really good watching the show, messing around. I'm like, all right, you know, he comes in, chokeslams me, and boom. That was it. I was out the rest of the night. Oh, boy. But memories. I know you guys don't really care too much particularly about that, but that's my memory. And that's what I'm talking about with Big Show. Braun Strowman's kind of that Big Show-esque character. He's fooling around with that cross entertainment or overlapping entertainment genres. And I know they're trying to get eyeballs on the product. They're trying to do the crossover audience. I get it. But once in a while, can the existing and the guys that are and gals that are here actually stand up and get a W once in a while and say, "Hey, you don't belong in our world"? No, they don't. WWE just cuts a fat check, makes the existing guys and gals look like fools, and then that person goes away. You never see him again. You could say, well, what about from Saturday Night Live, Colin Jost and the other fool? Well, Braun Strowman did get his hands on them, but then they come back this week. And again, they're on Fox being obnoxious a-holes. They are awful. Awful people. Awful personalities. But I'm looking forward to this Tyson Fury deal. Tyson Fury has a presence. Tyson Fury has something that a lot of the stars that are not in WWE that come in don't have. He has that, the it factor. He could translate to this genre if he actually ever committed himself. And reportedly, he's getting $15 million for this match in Saudi Arabia at Crown Jewel. $15 million for one match. So this match is happening. And again, I'm sure that Braun Strowman's going to make look like a fool. I'm sure that Tyson Fury will go over and knock him out. And then we'll never see Tyson Fury again. And guess who's there the next night? Braun Strowman. Mark my words. It's just the WWE formula. So, again, I didn't understand the Braun Strowman smashing a table and then having Tyson Fury pretend that he couldn't snap a pen, then snaps a pen. I don't know. I don't know what that's about. It's a very big head-scratching night. I didn't get it. What's there? Is it supposed to be funny that you can't break a pen? Or Is it symbolic of what you're going to do to Braun? I don't know. Somebody tell me, please. Explain. I don't know. All right, moving on to the women here. We had Natalya team with Lacey Evans, and they faced the Kabuki Warriors. Now, I don't know what the relationship is with Natalya and Lacey Evans. I don't know what the agenda is here. I don't know. I honestly don't. Is this something that's long-term? Probably not. I would assume that this is probably not something that's long-term with Natalya and Lacey Evans. However, it has been reported also that the WWE management is happy about her progress since she's debuted. So if that's the case, then I see what they're doing here in elevating Lacey Evans. So, all right. I mean, I don't know. Lacey Evans is, to me, I actually am a Lacey Evans fan, unlike a lot of people. A lot of people feel that she speaks too slow. Well, isn't that the gimmick? Isn't that the part that's supposed to piss you off as a heel? I didn't dislike it. I like Lacey Evans. I think she has a lot of potential. Is she still a bit rusty and at times clunky in the ring? Yes. Yes, she is. But that's fixable. That's fixable. So the Kabuki Warriors win, and that's fine. So, all right. We also had a match at the top of the show of Becky versus Charlotte. And I don't really, I've, for one, have seen this match more times than I care to see it in a while. I mean, for a while. This kind of feels like Randy Orton, John Cena. Back in the late 2000s when it was just nonstop pay-per-view match after pay-per-view match. Even if they put on great matches, it's just like, can we move on? So again, they put on good matches, and for the first time, I don't think Charlotte got busted in the mouth for something, which is amazing. Every time I look at her, about 5 to 6, 7 minutes into a match, I'm like, all right, where's the blood? Did she bite her lip? Did she bite her tongue? Did she, break a tooth? Did somebody hit her in the nose? Something. It's always something. But that didn't happen. So I'm sure that Charlotte was happy she didn't have to go get, her obligatory 3 stitches after the match. So there's that. But, we had Becky Lynch win in a roll-up fashion. And Charlotte is on a bit of a losing streak here. I don't know what it means. I'm sure it's just the cycle of the women's division. Eventually, Charlotte will be back on top. But I'm not sure what to make of it. I don't know what this means. I don't know if Charlotte is still a face. I don't know if that's the case. But what scares me is that Charlotte and Becky are on the same brand. So, I don't know. I've seen it. Been there, done that. I would like to see these two in a different program. Other than against one another. As good as their matches are and as great of chemistry as they have, I believe that, and I truly believe this, that Ronda Rousey is going to be the one to take the belt off of Becky upon her return. People aren't talking about that because Ronda Rousey has been in hiding since April of this year. And it's been 6 months since we've seen Ronda Rousey, but she's the one that lost to Becky, and it'd be a hell of a story to have her come back and be the one to take it from Becky again as the hottest heel. I think people will be excited to see Rousey. And again, I have no idea when she's coming back. I don't even know if it'll be this year. But it would make total sense, and it would make a big impact and come full circle and be great storytelling. If you had Ronda Rousey come back, people would be, oh, yay, Ronda Rousey's back. Oh, wait, we don't like you. And have her take the belt off of Becky. Great storytelling. It just all depends on whether or not she's actually truly starting a family. And if she is, say she got pregnant in April. Well, she's still got 3 months to go before she's due, which means after that, she's going to be home with the baby for another few months. So you wouldn't see her back here for 8, 9 months. It wouldn't be till midsummer next year that you'd have her back at minimum. So I don't think they're going to keep the belt on Becky that long. Again, it all depends. I'd have no idea about her personal life because we all speculated she wanted to start a family. That's why she left. And very well so. I mean, she also had an injury on 911. Was that what the show is called? I don't know. She was on some kind of show. She almost like sliced her finger off or something. So she's always doing something or breaking something or whatever, having babies, something. So I'm sure she's busy, but That would be a hell of a story. Just my two cents. Some other news stories here that came out of Monday Night Raw. The Street Profits got attacked by the OC. My God, we finally have a program for the Street Profits. The most obnoxious, overpaid, just poorly booked tag team that was never really a tag team in WWE. Backstage, just commenting on things and rapping, but not really, and just trying to be over the top, colorful, flamboyant, and well, that's what characters are. No, it was just awful. I'm sorry. It was terrible. Obnoxious. But now we have them in a program, so there's some positive. The positive is that they are with the OC. I think that's a good matchup. We now get to see what they can do in the ring for the main, on the main roster. We've seen them in NXT. If you've seen them in NXT, you kind of know what to expect. And I think this is a good first rivalry for them. Not in a championship match. They're not the tag team champions. The OC are not. It's just a good personal rivalry that these men can get into. And it'll be interesting to see who tags with them as well, to even the odds. Eventually getting to a 3-on-3 tag team match, probably at Crown Jewel. But for those that haven't seen the Street Profits in the ring, it's a good time for them to get acquainted with what they can do. Their finishing maneuvers and so forth, other than just being backstage terrible spokesmen for random matches that they decide to talk about while the camera's on. It's awful. So I'm glad they're in something we can sink our teeth into, and I can stop complaining about them every single week saying, my God, do something with them beyond being obnoxious fools. And now they are. So I can now quiet myself. All right, moving on here. I already did talk about the Viking Raiders as I'm going through my notes here. Aleister Black versus Eric Young. Now, the reason I'm going to talk about Aleister Black, not so much because of the match, which Aleister Black won, as he should. Young tapped out for the Dark Ritual. Nice name, nice finish. Aleister Black is on the ascent. Doesn't need to be in any huge programs right now, and I'm fine with that. So, Aleister Black, again, I bring up. So, I got an email. His name's Greg. I'll leave it at that. And I wanted to really talk about it on the air because it's something I could address. I think that's a cool thing. And by the way, if you want me to answer questions on the air, all you have to do is email me at realwwepodcast@gmail.com if you'd like me to answer your question on the air. So he says, I started listening within the past year and really enjoy what you're doing. I have a few thoughts after listening to your Raw review this week. Well, thank you. I know you mentioned you're enjoying his storyline right now, Aleister Black's, but I haven't been able to stand it after the second or third time he had a backstage promo asking people to come knock on his door and pick a fight with him. Why did it take him like 6 to 8 months to figure out that instead of being a whiny little blank, he has the choice to leave his little safe place and proactively go find someone to fight? He's such a waste of time of air, in my opinion, because all he ever does is whine about nobody wanting to fight him instead of doing something about it. Not to mention he speaks slower than Lacey Evans for some reason, which is actually making me not listen carefully to him. It makes me think he's a moron or just doesn't know English well enough. I don't know, but it's just super annoying. He just fought these two guys on Monday night, no idea who they were. So he's okay with fighting two at once. Why not go pick a fight with AOP since they're doing the exact same thing? My final complaint is a small one, but his entrance could be super badass if they change one little tiny thing. Have you ever noticed that when the board goes up that raises him up from laying down to standing, it stops too soon and he abruptly steps forward awkwardly? I agree with that. I totally agree. If they made the board that lifts him up move forward just a bit more, it would raise him up into the position he wants to be without the little stumble step. Totally agree with that. So first of all, yeah, that little thing I've noticed too. It's a split second, but it does make a difference in the presentation. As far as him, not wanting to go proactively find someone, well, he's a heel. He's a heel. He's booked as a heel. I think he is correctly booked as a heel. He is the cocky guy who's asking anyone to come fight him. He believes in himself so much that he's not even going to select his own opponent. He's going to tell the entire locker room to come find him. That's arrogance. Is that a likable trait in most human beings? The answer is no. So what does that What does that really fit? What role? Heel. He also speaks slow. You said he speaks slower than Lacey Evans. Yes, he does. But if he's annoying you, and is the way he speaks is annoying, what does that do? Fulfills the heel role. So he's also facing nobodies right now, which you mentioned. And yes, that's fine. But what did Braun Strowman do for how long? Braun Strowman faced nobodies in squash matches to build a foundation that this guy's dominant and look forward to seeing him in true competition. That's good. That's what you do with men and women that you want to build and lay a foundation for. I'm kind of on the opposite end of what you're... I mean, I understand what you're saying, but maybe realize that what the things that annoy you outside of his entrance, which I agree, with his cadence, the way he speaks, how he's in squash matches, that kind of thing, that's supposed to annoy you. His arrogance that he doesn't pick his own opponents. Heel, 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 heel. So, something to think about. So, thank you for the email. Thank you for the question. Much appreciated. And again, feel free to follow up with me at realwwepodcast@gmail.com anytime you guys want a question or topic answered. And you can also head on over to patreon.com/wwepodcast if you want to get on the show. We're bringing somebody on this week for their show of their choice, anything wrestling related. I'm looking forward to that. But if you want your chance, head on over to patreon.com/wwepodcast. An entire show you can co-host with me. It's there. So check it out. So that's really Monday Night Raw in a nutshell. It was a weird show. It was confusing, but it progressed storylines. So in that sense, that was good. Rollins burning down the Firefly Funhouse. I don't want to be too quick to judge this yet because I don't know the direction of the intended direction. That's the key phrase. Where did they want to go? If the goal was to get him over as a face, epic fail. If it's to start to turn him heel, A+. So it really depends on which way they want to go. And we'll find out next week. Because next week will be step two towards this False Count Anywhere match that is taking place at Crown Jewel. Because that's the logical step after Hell in a Cell. Again, the logical step after Hell in a Cell is False Count Anywhere. And you guys know where we head from there, as I mentioned earlier in the show. So, guys, thank you for joining me. But before I go, I want to let you know that I'll be back again tomorrow with your wrestling nostalgia. And we get to talk about, I don't know yet. I'll think about it while I'm at work if there's some downtime. And then on Saturday, my co-host will be joining me for the Week in Review show that I know many of you love. And, it just non-coincidentally is the day after Friday Night SmackDown. So the purpose of that, obviously, is to review SmackDown and Raw. If I continue with Thursday, well, that's not fair because you're only able to review Monday night. So we get to talk about the draft and the fallout from the draft and all of the things that that follow and all the title changes. And as we march closer and closer to the beloved Crown Jewel pay-per-view. Again, guys, follow me on Twitter at the WWE Podcast. You can also support the show by giving your rating and review. It seriously helps. You guys know that I peaked out at number 14 in the wrestling category of Apple Podcasts. Really awesome. We fell over the last couple of days just because, hey, I haven't been producing shows at the rate I used to because of the move. But now that I'm getting settled in, things will be getting back to normal. And of course, don't forget too, this week, NXT and AEW, your hosts will be coming at you. Zach Perez and Chris will be reviewing AEW and NXT. That drops on Thursday. So you're going to want to check that out. The double dose of this show coming for you on Thursday. I'm looking forward to that. I know you guys are too. Always good to hear other voices on this show other than mine. So 5 times a week, this show will resume for you to absorb. So guys, thank you so much for listening. And as always, I'll talk to you guys next time.